But Gerrard! Here's Rooney! Oh my goodness me! That is one of the strikes of the season! Absolutely brilliant! Fantastic!
Hello, and welcome to the first of a few FPL 360 takes on the World Cup. For those of you who are listening for the first time, I'm Sean Sullivan, and I'm joined by co-host Chuck Booth.
Hey guys, we're back.
Yeah, so most of you probably know us from our work attempting to give you advice for the FPL, you know, standard campaign over for the Premier League. However, this summer we are going to be diving into the World Cup, as is pretty much every other soccer podcast. Quick little rundown. In these episodes, we're going to be giving you over a beer chat of how to look at each group. And we're going to start with Group A, which Chuck and I have kind of labeled as the group of meh.
Yeah, this group has one clear front runner and three teams that have people on them.
So we're going to start off with Russia, the host nation. They are home dogs. They are looked at to most likely, at least from a betting standpoint, come second out of the group, which you'll see we might not really agree with. But overall, they are towards the back half of favorites in the World Cup. Chuck, what can we expect to see when Russia takes the pitch in front of their home crowd?
You're basically going to expect them to try and shoot the ball straight down in a route one attack and muscle you off the ball. The issue is, in this group, that's not going to work very well.
Yeah, so if you look at kind of the way how this Russian squad are made up, they have a couple of names where even if you aren't too, you know, going to be diving too deep in the World Cup, you will have heard of them before. In the midfield, in terms of creative options, they have Alan Jagiev, who, if you think back to a couple of Euros ago, was supposed to be the next guy pinned for a big move. That never really fossilized. He's kind of cooled off. And then his sparring partner in the middle will be Alexander Golovin, who, it's weird, he's kind of shaping up to follow the trajectory of Jagiev, but he will need a good showing in order to do that. However, they will be without their premier striking option in Alexander Krikorin.
Which, you know, is those, he even a premier striking option when he's healthy?
Well, I mean, in terms of what they have, they're going to be relying on Fedor Samolov up top. He's 28. I mean, he's essentially a poacher. But, I mean, Krikorin, he plays in the Russian Premier League. He's developing into being, I guess, for lack of a better word, like a top eight striker in one of the big five leagues, in my opinion. And with him out, they're going to be relying on a guy who's more known for making the best of his situations. I think that's a big loss. Do you think that in the grand scheme of things, it's not something that's going to matter because we don't think Russia has enough, you know, fight in them to really be challenging to advance?
Yeah, the big thing is just I really don't think it matters. Fun fact, out of their entire 23-man squad, all of their players except three play in the Russian Premier League, which is only a number bettered by England with everyone in the Premier League. But I don't think that the Russian Premier League is, A, strong enough anymore to really rely on all of your players coming through there. And I just don't see anything in this team that scares me.
I mean, the one thing that kind of that does scare me, and this, it kind of goes two ways, is having a goalkeeper in their captain in Igor Akinfeev. I mean, he is a good shot stopper, but if we kind of look in his track record, he's been prone for errors in international tournaments. I kind of have this as a weakness, but I guess it's probably more fair to have it as an X factor. And when you have a keeper who's, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get out of him, and he's supposed to be your leader, I mean, that could make or break their tournament right there.
Oh, yeah, because if anything, he's a keeper known for not keeping clean sheets in European competitions. He kept his first clean sheet in the Champions League this year. He has had a very long career. That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, though, he was excellent during Euro 2008 when Russia made it to the semifinals. And then again, he did have a pretty bad howler in a fumble that ended up letting South Korea score last World Cup.
Just for a second, can you tell me how many years ago 2008 was?
What, 10?
Therefore, it doesn't matter even if you're a keeper.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess the biggest thing that it kind of boils down to with Russia is, and look, I mean, I don't think they're going to get out of the group, but then again, they're home dogs playing at home soil, so that is kind of an extra pep in their step.
Match fixing?
I feel like, you know, just in how the world's become with people listening to other people chat, I don't really think we're allowed to comment on that. I'm not sure how far up we are on Putin's list of podcasts, but I'm sure if he was listening, I would just like to let him know we don't think there's going to be match fixing.
It's okay. It won't be as bad as the Brian Colangelo saga in Philadelphia right now.
All right, so I guess in terms of overall outlook, do you think Russia is the weakest team in this group?
100%.
So you're kind of writing off the fact that they're the home nation. That's not gonna help them at all.
It might help them get a point, but I think that even if they get a point, the other teams in the group get at least three.
So then I guess playing devil's advocate, if Russia were to advance from this group, how do you think they would do it? You think it's more so getting lucky?
Number one, that means Mo Salah is going to be at 60% or less throughout this entire tournament. It means the entire Saudi Arabia defense is going to break down. And it probably is also going to need them to get a result against Uruguay.
All right, so I guess we're labeling Russia's chances of getting out of Group A at probably
minuscule.
Minuscule with the next team we're going to talk about, which is Saudi Arabia. Russia will be opening the tournament against Saudi Arabia on June 4th in Moscow. And when they do so, the Saudis are an interesting team because this is someone that I had kind of written off when the World Cup groups initially came out. But then upon further investigation, I think that they do have some interesting elements throughout their team. What kind of stands out for you about this nation?
So this is a fun squad. Like, I actually love Saudi Arabia. And that is not a word that I ever expected to be saying while talking about international soccer, but they're fast, they're fun, and they score goals.
Yeah, the one thing that kind of, you know, with a lot, it's pretty much all domestic names on their team sheet, so this is going to be a lot of guys that most people have never heard of. The one guy who kind of jumps off the page for me is Mohamed Al-Shalawi. He scored 108 goals in 174 matches playing in the Saudi Arabian First Division. So he's someone to keep an eye on. I mean, it's going to be obviously a bigger test for them than him playing on home soil for his country's league. But, I mean, I guess, do you think that unknown firepower is kind of enough to put them in contention for maybe challenging Egypt for that second spot?
I mean, considering the fact that they're playing against two really bad defenses in Egypt, this is a group that could come down to goal difference. And when it comes back down to goal difference, having players that are faster than the other team so you can just hit it over the top, not a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I kind of have with them is just from top to bottom, they're a fast team. They have a ton of pace in them. Surprisingly, they do have some guys that are pretty good on the ball. But in terms of stature and physicality, that is somewhat lacking in their team. They don't really have a large side at the back, up front, through the middle. So while pace is certainly their strength, it kind of works into being their weakness with really not having huge bodies on the field.
And it also plays very well for when our next scene we're going to talk about plays against them.
Yeah, so I mean, if you kind of look at Saudi Arabia, as Chuck said, it'll stand out is they're going to be fast. They're going to be fun to watch. These are games where if you initially thought you weren't going to watch them, you're going to watch because they're definitely going to produce some good highlights. But it's going to be tough when they go up against like Russia, because I think that they're a better team. But if this gets into a physical dogfight, I don't really see how they'd be able to, you know, take enough punches just from a bigger Russian opposition.
Well, also, big thing with Saudi Arabia is in their matches, if I'm going to be betting on the lines, I'm betting the over in every single one.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be goals plenty in their matches. I mean, I guess if you were kind of explaining it to someone who, I know we've harped on it a lot lately, who has never watched them before, I guess you would just say look for team speed.
Team speed and a creative number 10 that pops up everywhere, trying to pull the strings.
Yeah, an interesting thing too for their outlook is they have finished bottom of the group. They haven't won a match at the World Cup since 1994. So history is not exactly on their side.
But I think that ends.
Matters at all?
I think it ends. It's not as bad as with league soccer, where everyone's playing all the time and that psychological draw really gets to you. But like, consider that most of the players that were there in 94 probably aren't there now. And also, it's not like Saudi Arabia qualifies every year.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, it's just one of those things. It's always funny when you look at nations' histories in the World Cup, because a lot of the times you have guys who are, you know, not even able, old enough, they're too old to even play soccer at any level anymore when you're looking at these numbers, these historical trends.
Exactly.
Yeah, but so I mean, I guess what we're gonna say here is, do you think they're gonna finish third, or you think they're gonna finish fourth?
I think they're gonna finish third.
Okay. Moving on to the team that we both believe is going to finish second, the nation of Mo Salah, Egypt, is the next team we're gonna talk about in this group.
Chuck, nah, you had it right the first time.
Yeah, Chuck, what can we expect of Egypt during this tournament? It's a controversial question, but I feel like we need to just touch on it briefly.
Well, the funny thing is, it sounds like get the ball to Mo Salah, but it's really use Mo Salah to create space.
Yeah, Egypt is in the entirety of the term, they are a classic counter-attacking side. They're going to sit back, they're going to absorb the pressure, and they're going to wait for their chance to pick one of two players out on the break. Mo Salah, when he's in the team, because it looks like he most likely will miss the opening group stage match. And then someone whose club got relegated from the Premier League last season, but who was good when he did play, Robin Ansobi.
I know. I got some pretty good plays out of him in Taga during the points of last year, and I'm hoping that he gets the move to Huddersfield that he's being linked to.
Yeah, I like Sobi. He is a little bit bigger in stature than you would expect out of a shifty winger. I know he's probably going to end up playing on the left. He can play on the left or right. I wouldn't be surprised if he shifts over to the right for the game if Salah does miss one of those matches. But he is definitely someone to keep an eye on. And then obviously at the back, sticking with Premier League talent, we have Ahmed Hegazi. He's a center back. He's big, he's physical, and he's great in the air on set pieces.
Also, don't forget that Elneny from Arsenal is manning that CDM role for them and does pretty well at it.
Yeah, I was going to say, Elneny, you know, he's kind of the butt of jokes with a lot of stuff at Arsenal, but he is going to be kind of the glue in the middle of this midfield. You know, Egypt, it's funny because we kind of define them by Mo Salah, but it's going to be crazy because if they can get at least a point without him, they're pretty much setting themselves up to advance from the group.
I definitely agree with that. And in things like the World Cup, when teams are pretty close in their groups, after the group that I 100% see finishing, the team that I 100% see finishing first, then it's immediately, okay, who's the best player of the other teams? And in this group, it ain't even close because it's Mo Salah. And honestly, so out of the players there, Sobi may have a case at being the second best player.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be funny because, I mean, outside of Salah, Elneny, and Sobi, I mean, there's not a ton of guys everyone's going to be familiar with. I mean, at the moment, that's definitely one of, if I had to make kind of tiers of, you know, best trio of players, I don't think they'd be tier one or two. But if you look at the entirety of the tournament, I'd probably put them in tier three, where, you know, you have star firepower, the guy who's been around forever, and then you have a youngster. So I do think it's going to be enough of a, you know, I do think there would be a realization that while we are dependent on Mo Salah to be successful, we really only need to get 9 through 90, most likely 90 minutes without him to prove that they're more than just a star-dependent nation.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
So I guess in terms of outlook, Chuck and I both have them going through. Do you think there's enough magic in Mo to them through the round of 16, or do you think that's where their journey will end?
Oh, their journey's ending, and it's ending hard in the knockout stages.
All right, yeah, so, I mean, that kind of hits the nail on the head. I think it's going to be interesting, but in all honesty, Salah's not going to be fully 100%. I think he's going to be fit enough to get him out of the group stage, just because I think that Egypt from top to bottom is better than Russia and Saudi Arabia. But, yeah, I do not really see them being, you know, the Denmark or the Iceland of this tournament. Moving on to the fourth and final nation in Group A, we have Uruguay, who comes into this tournament as inside the top 10 for potential winners. Do we think this is the year they kind of get over the hump? I feel like every year,
nope,
they're around there,
nope,
but they're never taken too serious.
They'll win their group, but the issue is Uruguay, because of the fact that they're going to play in a 4-4-2, their formation is essentially going to be four defenders, four people wandering aimlessly, and two really good forwards.
Yeah, I mean, you have Luis Suarez and Edinson Cavani up front, which, in my opinion, is one of the top five.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that. Like,
yeah, I mean, you have goal scoring, power, pace. You have the X factors and defenders being afraid to go near Suarez. Cavani's a big boy, and he's got pace. Is exactly what you want up front. At the back, you have one of the best experienced center back pairings in Diego Godin and Jose Jimenez from Atletico Madrid. You have Sebastian Cotes back there too, plus Fernando Muslera.
Muslera is just ageless.
Yeah, but in the midfield, it's not really it's funny, you, for as good as their forwards and their defenses, their midfield is as much a question mark.
Yeah, I don't get how they just don't have a competent midfield, but when you're calling Gaston Ramirez into the World Cup, you might need to rethink what you're doing a little bit.
Yeah, Gaston Ramirez is a very, very interesting case, just because, kind of to back up everything, you know, he went from being a Middlesbrough castaway to going and playing in Europe, and then, you know, I'm actually pretty sure he got cut.
Wait,
during today's final 23-man thing. Yeah. So, look, they're not going to have to worry about him because he's cut. But, I mean, in terms of other options, they have Carlos Sanchez, who plays for Monterrey. I mean, he's more of a defensive midfielder, though. Cristian Rodriguez. I guess what my biggest takeaway is, being for all the personalities they have, it's all at the back and it's all up front. It's nothing in the middle.
And there's no one to link up play.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest issue for me. I mean, I don't think that's going to be an issue during the group stage. It shouldn't be. But when you get looked at like they should be looked at as one of the, you know, in the upper echelon of favorites, there is such a void of, I guess, well-publicized talent in the midfield that makes me kind of be very skeptical about them. I mean, do you think I'm looking into that too much, or do you think that's a fair assessment of them?
No, I definitely think it's fair, because Uruguay is a team that should be much better than they are. And it baffles me how they realistically don't have midfielders that are up to snuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess you can kind of bury that with the way that they play, and considering they have two center backs who can both play the ball out of the back, it's probably going to be more like them setting up with almost like six guys defending and having those two defensive midfielders being that first line of defense. But when you get in the upper echelon of talent,
That's not going to work.
they're not. I mean, they're like, I would look at them kind of as the best of the rest. I think that's a fair assessment because they do have the firepower to be up there, but I don't think top to bottom when you line them up with some of the other nations like Germany, Spain, or, awkwardly enough, even England for that matter. I just don't think they have enough to win it in the midfield where they can really can control tempos of this game moving outside of the round of 16.
Yeah, I have them losing immediately in the round of 16.
All right, so I guess kind of to summarize this group, the way we kind of have it stacking up, Uruguay and Egypt advancing. Okay, outside of Mo Salah, who is the player you're most excited to watch from Group A?
Oh, who am I most excited to watch?
I mean, I'm.
Honestly, I really want to see if Akinfeev can redeem himself at all during this World Cup.
Yeah, I always think it's funny when looking at goalkeepers because it's almost easier as a netminder to make a name for yourself for the World Cup if you play on a nation that's not as inclined at the back, just because you're going to be making more shots, you're going to be relied on for a heavier workload. And I do agree with that because this is kind of going to make his make or break his career as a Russian international. For me, I think the guy I'm most excited to see is Robin Nsobi, just because he's coming off a year where I think he was underutilized at Stoke City, and he's essentially playing for the next move. I believe he's 21, 22, so this is kind of make or break time. If he uses this as a springboard for the next 5 years, or he has to wait till the next World Cup cycle and kind of just slug his way out to make that next step.
This is also when Stoke City's going to be seeing those dollar signs in their eyes.
Yeah, if anything, they're going to be rooting for him to be in as involved as many goals as possible during Group A play. All right, well, with the player to watch out of the way, I guess that kind of does it about for Group A. So everybody, stay tuned. We're going to be coming back at you with another group preview of Group B this week. So stay thirsty for World Cup content because it's going to be rolling out like hotcakes.